this episode of The Commercial Break.
So I forget sometimes, and I think, you know, my sister reminds me, and when we go out in public and stuff, because I'm really like, I don't care, like, we'll go out in public and stuff, and I don't think about, like, oh, this is a crowded area, and it recognized, it'll be like, you know, yesterday we're at the airport in San Antonio, Texas, and you're a small airport and great city. It's really lively, and like, we're just gonna go to our plane. We saw like a little vending machine, licorice vending machine, and we like by the TSA area, and we went there, and the TSA agent, excuse me, sir, and I was like, oh my god. And I turned around and they looked serious. Excuse me, sir, can I talk to you for a second? And I was like, oh my god, like, what? I was like, what did I pack? Like, did I like, is the guy like, do you have a water bottle that I forgot? I got it.
The next episode of The Commercial Break starts now.
Oh yeah, cats and kittens, welcome back to The Commercial Break. I'm Brian Green, and no one is here with me, at least not right now. Chrissy will be here in just a few minutes on the TCB Infomercial Tuesday to help me interview Mr. Harvey Guillen. Harvey Guillen, of course, is from the very popular show What We Do in the Shadows, one of our favorites around here. So we're very excited to have him. We don't have a ton of actors and actresses here on the show. Thespians don't tend to make their way to The Commercial Break. But when we got an opportunity to talk to Harvey, we said, we'll take that. Because, again, What We Do in the Shadows, one of our favorite television shows of all time. And if you haven't seen the show, I'll spare you all the drama. You should go and watch it. I will do no spoiler alerts here, but it's basically about vampires. It's a comedic take on the vampire genre. Go ahead and see it. It is lovely. It is wonderful. Now, a few facts about Harvey that you should know that I may or may not ask him about when he comes on. He was homeless for a bit of time on his journey to being a noted actor. He basically raised his family. He was in one of those family units where everybody chipped in, and Harvey was a big part of that. And when he kicked out on his own to become an actor, he was homeless. So he lived in a car, I believe one of his friend's cars, for a period of time, and he would pay his way through acting school by recycling cans. Cans! I don't even know if that's still a thing. I'm sure it's not. Now I pay someone else to recycle. They don't pay me. But that just shows you the gumption that this guy has got. The gumption to go ahead and recycle cans for acting classes. He's had some comic training with the Groundlings and the Upright Citizens Brigade. And he's done, you know, What We Do in the Shadows. Yes, I would say that that's probably what he's known most for. But don't sleep on Puss in Boots. Puss in Boots was a fantastic cartoon, one that I enjoy watching with the kids because it feels like one of those cartoons that slyly nods to the adults also. In other words, you can watch it and have a good time. And he is in Puss in Boots also. So while What We Do in the Shadows may be so far his crowning achievement, his role that he's most noted for, Puss in Boots, I would say, would be on a list too. If I was going to make one for Harvey, I'd say Puss in Boots. Put that on there too. I think Harvey is one of those guys you're going to hear a lot more about coming up in the future. And we are very excited to have him here on The Commercial Break. Like I said, Chrissy is coming in. Nothing is wrong. There is no drama. Chrissy is just not here right now when I'm recording this before Harvey comes in. But when I take a break and through the magic of telepodcasting, I bring Harvey into the studio via the television sitting in front of me, Kristen is also going to be sitting in front of me, or technically to the side of me, but you get what I'm saying. Don't get fussy. Chrissy's here. She's coming. She's going to be with us. All right, let's do this. Let's take a short break. And then when we come back, we'll be with Harvey.
Hey, it's Rachel, your new voice of God here on TCB. And just like you, I'm wondering just how much longer this podcast can continue. Let's all rejoice that another episode has made it to your ears, and I'll rejoice that my check is in the mail. Speaking of mail, get your free TCB sticker in the mail by going to tcbpodcast.com and visiting the Contact Us page. You can also find the entire Commercial Break library, audio and video, just in case you want to look at Chrissy, at tcbpodcast.com. Want your voice to be on an episode of the show? Leave us a message at 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Tell us how much you love us, and we'll be sure to let the world know on a future episode. Or you can make fun of us. That'd be fine, too. We might not air that, but maybe. Oh, and if you're shy, that's okay. Just send a text. We'll respond. Now I'm going to go check the mailbox for payment while you check out our sponsors. And then we'll return to this episode of The Commercial Break.
And Harvey is here with us now. I am a big fan of some of the work that Harvey has done.
Welcome, Harvey.
Thanks. Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. Okay, so quick question. Chrissy and I were just watching a video about a doctor down in Florida who was arrested for having a party with 30 children under the age of 16 years old, and she was providing alcohol to those children. And the question to my co-host here was, did you have the type of parents, or did you know the type of parents who would throw those parties when you were young, like go to people's houses and they would have alcohol and people would get wild?
No, that's kind of crazy. That's insane.
This might be a generational thing. Yeah.
I mean, we had like quinceañeras and stuff where, you know, there's kids and adults and everyone's invited to the, you know, barbecue, but you were always aware if like kids are trying to sneak in like a beer or something and you're absolutely not. Why would you, like, that sounds dangerous, trouble, wrong, illegal. It reminds me of like being when my early in my career, we went to a party after an award show, and I was on a show, and I think everyone on our show was like 21, had just turned 21, 22, and we went to a party, and there was kids there from like children's networks, and I was like, where are the parents? Like, it was literally like, that was my first thought, was like, where are the parents? And I remember looking at another actor who was on a different show, and they looked at another actor who was on Glee, and they were like, we should probably leave. I don't want to be the oldest person.
I don't want to get arrested. Yeah.
It was somebody's like, you know, like party who was an actor and entertainer, and you go, you run in the same circles and people are like, happy 21st and whatnot. But at a 21st birthday, there was definitely kids who were 19 and 20. And in the state of California, if you're the oldest person at a party, you are responsible for that like household. I think that's what someone told me. I think that was what the other actor told me. And I was like, I don't want to be responsible for any of I don't want to be responsible for any of them. So we left and we went to get like sushi because we like, you know, even at 21 and 22, you're like, we're mature. You're not that much older than these other kids who are 19 and 20.
No.
You're definitely older and you're an adult in that scenario where you can drink, and you're people at a party who cannot drink are reaching for a bottle of vodka they can't reach.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, it's like, true.
And I think at one point we looked over and someone was at the counter reaching for something, and it was kind of comical and kind of like, you know, disturbing because we were like, I don't care when they reach that bottle.
Right.
I think the wildest law that the state of Georgia had on the books, I don't know if it's still here in California, Georgia, two totally different places, but in so many ways. But Georgia had a law in the books when I first started waiting tables in my teens. And one of the laws was, if the adult consents to alcohol being, you can't serve it yourself, but if the adult is there and consents to their children drinking the alcohol, then it's legal.
Right.
And I thought that was the fucking wildest thing. I'm like, wait, so this guy can buy a margarita and hand it to his child and let him drink it. I can't serve it to him, but he can drink it if the dad allows. It was disturbing. And I always, having drank alcohol as a teenager myself, I always knew that alcohol was probably the drug I was scared most of as a teenager, if I'm being honest, because people got too crazy.
Right.
I always like joke because people are like, when did you start, you know, when did you have your first drink? Like you sneak when you're 16 or I didn't have my first drink till my 21st birthday.
Wow.
Because I was trying to be like, you know, it was probably the one that scared me the most as well. Cause I was like, no, that just leads down a slippery slope. You know,
yeah, it does. Yeah.
What's next? Heroin.
Right.
Like once you start one. But I was so like worried about ruining any kind of chances that I had to like kind of, you know, go on my path that I wanted to take. And I was like, I'm not going to do anything, you know. And now as an adult, I'm like, well, you know, I know the difference between like having a cocktail and going crazy. And let's take the car. Yeah, the bar, you know? But as a kid, I was like, I did not touch alcohol. And I know my siblings were like, yeah, I had my first drink when I was like 16 at a friend's party. I was like, I didn't have that. Like, I just didn't. I guess I was pretty square then. If I was like, I don't want to say I was square. I was mature for my age.
Yeah, you were mature for your age. Well, also you I think were in. I don't know you, but I'm assuming you were focused and motivated. Mm-hmm. You wanted to accomplish things.
You had a goal.
And you knew that veering off that path in any way could possibly put that dream in jeopardy. So the dream was more important than any one particular drink or night or party or whatever
right.
it was.
Right. And I already had so much on my plate. Like I had full like exams and TAP finals and like co-parenting like my siblings because I was like, you know, babysitting. Like I didn't need to have an alcohol problem. Like I
did. Yeah, like, seriously. Yeah.
That would have been like a real like Lifetime movie, you know, like it would have been right. All he wanted was to become an actor and I was a baby on
and all he was a drunk, an abusive sibling. Yeah.
Lifetime is proud to present, you know.
how many siblings do you have?
I have 3 younger and 1 older.
Okay. And so your parents were working or?
They were always working. And they were just like, you know, my parents were just hustlers. So like just trying to like get us a better life, you know, in America and just like. We all pitched in. Like, that was just, like tradition. Like, it was just, like, mm-hmm. if you're a Latino family, you pitch in. Like, if you're the oldest, you took care of the younger kids, which my older brother kind of bailed. Like, he didn't want that. So he's like, bye. Like,
and your turn.
And your turn. I think he turned 16 and, like, moved out. And I was like, where are you going? And I was like, not here. I was just like, and then I became, like, the oldest in the family. So I guess I see like that expectation of like, you're the oldest, right? And I was like, not really, but I kind of took responsibilities of being the oldest, and which I don't regret because I love my siblings. And in a way, it was nice for me to like see that, like have that parental instinct in me as a young age because I was like, do I want kids? And as an adult now, I do not.
And well, fair enough. You did it once. Do you want to do it again?
Right? I always say, I was like, my only regret in life is I had no children, yet I raised 3, you know? But that's like, I love the idea that like, you know, now as an adult, I have a different dynamic with my siblings because as a kid, I had this like parental, like you have to do your homework, you have to eat your breakfast and you have to do these things. And that's no fun as a kid because you want to be the fun brother. Yeah. But at the same time, you're like, we have to have structure in the house. And then mm-hmm. now as an adult, we have all the fun in the world because that had us been taken off and I'm like, I'm not your, you know, parental figure. I'm your sibling. And so now we have fun and like get together and have dinners and go to Disneyland, you know, and do adventures that we didn't get to do when we were younger. So now as an adult and we have the money to do it, we can do it.
Exactly.
I'm the biggest kid you'll ever meet. Cause I love going to like Disneyland and love going to theme parks and whatnot. Cause as a kid, it was so expensive to go once, you know?
Yeah.
Now I'm like, we're going all the time. Whenever you want. Whenever we want, we just get in the car and go.
Well, I love that.
I love that, too.
I love that. I think that that's, you know, you are rewarded for kind of the blind faith in the family, in the unit, in the betterment of all. And that, first of all, takes a special kind of personality, right? And second of all, it is a charming and warming thought mm-hmm. that your family unit was there kind of all working together to get to a better place. And then you made it. And now you're here, right? And now you're able to do the things that you want to do and move backwards a little bit. I also love that you go to Disney. I'm a huge theme park Disney fan mm-hmm. myself. Yeah. We have Disney World over on this side. You should come visit, Harvey. It's really cool.
I was just at Disney World. I was just at Disney World. Earlier this year, I actually shot a spot there. And one of the perks was you get to shoot at Disney World. We're like, do we get to stay at Disney World? No. And they were like, if you want. And I was like, okay, I do. Yeah. And then we got to go to Epic Universe for the opening week. And that was fun. And so, yeah, that's all. I love all that stuff because something about it. And people was like, you know, I hate that phrase when people are like Disney adults. And it's like, it's not about, I don't think it's about being a Disney adult. It's about doing what you want to do. And it's like, if you have kids and you take them to Disneyland, that's your memory with them. But if you have adults who want to go have a cocktail, you know, around the world.
Yeah.
I'll go on a ride and just like say, that was good. And then go home. That's your, you know, prerogative. And that's, you're allowed to do that. And I think it's funny that it seems like Disneyland or theme parks are just for adults or just for kids and not adults. And that's not true. I think you can enjoy it at any age. Just like go to the beach. You can't say the beach is just for people who love being in the ocean. And it's like, some people don't like the ocean. Some people just want to ocean waves. Some people want to lay on the sand and the warm sand, you know, touch their skin and feel the sun on their face. So it's, I think it's what it means to an individual. That's what's important to them and let them be.
I see a lot of criticism for Disney adults online. I think it's kind of a fun, trendy thing to do, to beat up on Disney adults. And I agree that some of the behavior is a little much, especially when you may not be allowing the children to have fun. But I think those people don't realize that when Walt built the original theme park, the whole idea was we need a place where adults and children can come and have fun, because it didn't exist at the time. It was either mainly for children, or it was like a carnival that would come into town and it was too seedy for the kids and the adults would go. Yeah. And so he said, I want a clean, fun place where the adults aren't just watching the children. They're having fun also. Yeah. It was the whole point in the first place. And so people who are having fun, you know, oh, Disney adults that like theme parks. Of course. Who does? Who doesn't like a theme park? I mean, you have to be a certain age, right?
Yeah. And I always think half the time people who say that, people who do judge others for doing that, it's like, when was the last time you went to a theme park? You know?
Yeah. Like, well, there are fun sponges out there for sure.
Sometimes I think about that. I was like, maybe you're not fun to have around at a theme park. Maybe this attitude is what's not welcomed in a group outing at a theme park. Maybe have the funds to go to theme park and you're upset and you're bitter about it, and like, that's okay, but why bring someone else down? Like, focus your energy on something positive, not the negative.
I agree, but it's a national pastime right now to beat up on everybody.
Of course.
So, you know, I think our fans will probably know you from a couple of things. You were a voice in Puss in Boots.
Love that movie.
Yeah, which I didn't know until I started doing some research on you. But I love that movie. Now my kids love that movie. And then What We Do in the Shadows.
That's
of the course. That's probably what I would imagine a large chunk of your fans know you from also. I'm interested to know how you got involved in that project. Mm-hmm. I think it's brilliant. I think it's brilliant, brilliant comedy.
I mean, well, which one? Shadows?
Both. Tell us about Puss in Boots first, and then go for tell us about Shadows.
Involved. I had always wanted to do voiceover my whole life. I grew up watching animation. I think Guillermo del Toro has a great quote that animation is, again, for everyone. I feel like there's this like thought that animation is for children or adolescents. It's like some of the most touching stories I've seen have been through like stop motion, you know, animation. And
definitely,
I got the offer to do Perrito in Puss in Boots, and I was just floored because I've been trying to do voiceover for years. I didn't get my first break in voiceover until like season two of Shadows. Like, I think it was a casting director who became a fan of Shadows and was like, you're really funny, you should audition for this role. Absolutely, I will audition for anything, because I had been trying for years, and I always get close, and I always go with someone with a name or someone else who's been in the business for years, because, you know, to be in animation, I think you have to be able to do like a million voices, and and those people work, and they constantly want to, you know, they book the next gig and they work with the same group of people, so it's a tighter a community to get into, I feel like, because it's, I think of it this way, think about the actor who did TV and film and movies and whatnot. And then after a while, they're like, I don't want to worry about what my hair looks like. I don't want to worry about like what I wore to the audition. I don't want to worry about my height, my, you know, my weight or whatever. What can you do that is performing but still part of the artistic world? It's voiceover. Whole world and universe with just your voice. You can't rely on your, you know, mannerisms or your facial expressions because you're not in front of the camera. All you can rely is telling a story through your voice. And that's hard. Sometimes I go home more exhausted from voiceover than I do from on camera, because you have to convey everything, empathy, love, hate, all these emotions through your voice and through your acting, which if you think about it, close your eyes. And if you can't see it, then you didn't do a good job.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. That's true. It's cinema, right?
Yeah. And so I got offered to do a Puss in Boots, and it was next to Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek, which I grew up watching. And those were mom and dad. Like, mom and dad to Latino community were Antonio Banderas and Salma Hayek. When they succeeded, when it was one feather on their hats, it was a feather on all our hats. Yeah. Because it was like watching someone, or representation was so limited. And so I was just like, gosh, I get to like do this with both of them. And that's so cool to join them as like the third musketeer in this movie. And I was just, you know, super excited. And the product that came out was like the animation style was like the cutting edge, and like it was really cool. I got nominated for an Academy Award. I didn't think that my first nomination for an Academy Award would be performing as Perrito, you know.
That's amazing.
But you take it any way you can get it, right?
Yeah. And he does have one of the, and I just did a Comic-Con this past weekend, and somebody came up to me and quoted their favorite line, and I think it's one of my favorite lines of all time, is when Perrito is donating his wish to Puss, and he says, "It's okay, I don't need it, because maybe one life is enough."
It's a very sweet line. Yeah.
And just to think about that line, I was like, that's such super, it's like a perfect line with the period at the end. It's just like, if I could just go off that line, it's like, it reminds me all the time. Like, it's like always aspiring to like live like the Joneses, or like wanting to get more. And that's always good to have aspiration, but sometimes just like stop and be like, one life's enough, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, it's a sweet movie, and it can be enjoyed by adults and children, mm-hmm. right? And I think that a lot of, especially like the Pixar movies and stuff like that, I was just having a conversation with someone about this the other day, is that these movies now have depth that I think cartoons when we were kids, if you watch it as an adult, there were probably inside jokes that mm-hmm. were put in here and there for adults and kids. And of course, you had the Flintstones and the Simpsons and all that other stuff that might have been geared toward adults. But these movies, in a lot of ways, the way that they're watched by children is completely different than the way that they're watched by adults. Sure. But all of us get something out of it, right? I mean, mm-hmm. think about the movie Up, right? It's a story about our, you know, aging and how change happens quickly and when it happens. But for kids, it's a fun movie about a guy who puts balloons on his house, right? Yeah. So they all have different meanings. You can watch it, but I think Puss in Boots is one of those too.
It does. You're absolutely right. It has a different meaning for a different person for a different reason, you know? And that's what I love. And it'll mean something as you age with the movie.
True.
Like, you know, and, you know, going back to Shadows, like the idea that like it means so much to different people for different reasons. Like the show that I went and I booked the show by going to Wine and Cheese Night. Like my Mimi Michaels was in town with her newborn baby, and they were getting away from the storm from New York. And she says, "Hey, I'm in town for the week, and you just see my baby." And I was like, "Okay." And then I was already like in my pajamas at home, and I was like, "Ugh!" And it was like raining, and I was like, "Okay, I'm gonna do it, because if I don't do it now, I don't know when I'm gonna see her again and whatnot." And so I drove over in LA, which in the rain, like, you know, what's better in the rain?
No.
I got there, and it was her brother, it was her and her baby and her husband, and this girl I never met before. And it was a small group, and we're just having wine and cheese. And the next day, I got a text from an unknown number, and it was like, "Hey, it's me, Yvonne, the girl that I met." And it's like, "Oh, hey, I got your number from Mimi, and I think you're so, you know, effing funny. I think you should audition for my fiance's new show." And I was like, "Oh, I'm not falling for that again. I don't do that."
You don't do that kind of work, Harvey? I do that kind of work. Next time, tell them, direct them over here.
Yeah. And I was like, "I don't think so." And then she's like, "What?" And I was like, "I'm kidding, what?" And she's like, "No, but you should hurry, because they're auditioning for this role right now, and they've already booked everyone. They've already cast the whole cast. They already cast Kaywan, Mark, Matt, Natasha, and it was the last part. They were auditioning for this role." And I was like, "Who's the casting director?" Like, "Allison Jones." I was like, "I've never gone in for Allison Jones." And if you know, Allison Jones has cast everything under the sun, like Bridesmaids, The Office, Golden Girls, Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, like stuff that you're like, I love all those things. So yeah. I was like, I want to go and meet her. That's all I wanted to do. Because I got the script, and Guillermo was 25 years older than I am. And I was like, "Oh, no." And I was like, "Okay, well, if she can get me in the door just to meet her, I'll just go meet her. I'll just go do this character in this age and this body and this time right now." That was my thought process. And so I thought, well, I should age myself up. So like I wore this like long sleeve orange gross like collared shirt and this sweater vest. And I found these Harry Potter glasses, and I popped them out. And I parted my hair in the middle, because I had my writing partner, Jamie, had a monster's book by Guillermo del Toro. And that's the only Guillermo I knew.
Yeah.
So that's the only Guillermo I know. So I parted my hair in the middle, like his haircut.
Yeah.
And I went to the audition. And I usually don't do that. I don't dress up completely for a character. I usually wear something in the color and the essence of, you know, that character, but not like fully. And I think in my head, I was like, well, this is going to stand out. No one on television would ever wear this.
Little did you know.
And then I booked it, and I went the first day to the fitting and stuff, and they had taken a picture of my audition, and literally they mimicked the audition outfit. And Taika was in the trailer room the first day for hair and makeup, and he said, "What you do for your hair?" And I was like, "Oh, I parted in the middle." And I was silly. It was great. Yeah, we want that.
So you're stuck with it.
I was stuck with this look that I changed the audition for. And then now there's Funko Pops with this character, the hair and the outfit. Every time I look at those Funko Pops, I'm like, I did this. I made the choice. I made a choice.
Fault. Yeah.
I made a choice and now this, but now I love that that's become Guillermo's aesthetic and people dress up like him and whatnot. But well, the show has meant to so many people. And I had a two brothers who drove 8 hours to a Comic-Con and they showed up to the, you know, they get signatures and stuff. And they goes, hey, do you mind if I FaceTime my dad? He's the one who introduced us to your show. I was like, your dad did? That's so cool. I was like, yeah. And I was like, where is he? He's like, he's home. He's not feeling well. I was like, okay. I was like, yeah, FaceTime him. And he FaceTimed and he shows me the screen and the two brothers are behind the phone and they start crying.
Oh.
And I could see on the screen that the dad is in hospital.
Mm.
He's like, it doesn't look good. And he's in hospital and he's connected to oxygen.
Yeah.
And I can tell what this was. I can tell that this was a mission that these brothers got in a car and drove 8 hours to see me because this is the show that they bonded over with their father while he was going through like chemo and a really hard time and it didn't look well. And then so they drove all the way because they wanted to have this moment to tell him thank you for introducing us to the show. So it brings us together. And so you never know what something like that is going to mean to someone. You never know what work that you do today, even you think it's a silly show, a sketch or whatnot, a song. You don't know what that means to someone until you know what it means to someone.
Yeah, we've had that similar experience here. I mean, this is the dumbest comedy podcast. I mean, there's a lot of dumb comedy podcasts. Most of them are, but this is pretty silly. It's pretty dumb. But we have had letters written into us, one specifically that I can think of, that really brought us to our knees. And it was like, you know, we just think of it as us coming in here and laughing. And if somebody comes along for the ride, great. But then you hear a story about how important something is at a moment in time for someone. And you realize that you're greater than the sum of your parts. This thing has a life of its own. These characters that you play mean so much to so many people. And on the other side of a screen, you never really know what someone else is going through. And that must feel like fulfilling in a way that the paycheck can't. Fulfilling in a way that the, you know, being in a room full of named actors can't. It's just like it's fulfillment in an honest and organic way. Not that making the money and having all of the successes and titles doesn't, but
in a soulful way.
Yeah, in a soulful way. Yeah,
yeah. It does. It feels more fulfilling, like you said, and it feels more rewarding because sometimes, you know, truth be told, you do a project and there is no money in that project. Yeah. You know? You're not doing it. I've done projects that I see who the cast is and I'm like, this is an amazing cast. This is going to be fun. But the paycheck is nothing. You're not doing it for the paycheck, you know?
Yeah.
You're doing it because you want to have this and you want to have this character and work with these people and create something that you can be like, some of the best stuff I've done is stuff that people are like, oh my God, and I saw you, like, you know, for example, like Werewolves Within, you know, something that's like based on a video game turned into like this like indie film that became like this indie darling that like that cast is incredible. You know, Sam Richardson, like everyone from Michaela walked to, like, it's just like the list goes on and on of just people that like, and to this day, it's still some of my favorite people to work with. Mm-hmm. And we all did it for nothing. Like we were all in the middle of the forest. Cabins with no Wi-Fi, electricity. We shot that right before the pandemic and we didn't know the pandemic was about to happen.
And you guys suffered.
Yeah, we were like, we should all just live together, guys. We should all just like live together. And then like we left. We're like, what's happening? I got to the airport and there was like shut down in LA. And I was like,
And I was like, I should have stayed at the cabin.
Should have stayed at the cabin in the woods. We were already quarantined together. And it was like, you know, one of my favorite experiences to this day. People saw, you know, tell me, I see the chemistry with you guys and it's so cool. And I love that. I love when people can see that people are really having a good time. But not that you made a lot of money off of something like that, you know, indie and whatnot. But I like doing projects. Yeah, like, you know, yes, you can do your multi-million-dollar, like, big studio films, which I've done. But also, those are rewarding as well for different reasons. Mm-hmm. And it's, you meet people that you're admiring, love. And then you also do the indie films that you're like, this is a cool script. This is fun. And this is different. I pride myself in, like, doing a little bit of everything. So then people are always like, I didn't know you did that role. I didn't know this. That was you. And, like, it's always nice and a nice surprise when they see it.
Yeah, I've heard a couple of actors say, not on this show, but a couple of actors say, like, you know, some of the more famous actors, if you ever have the opportunity, it sounds like you're getting to that point, you're at that point, you do one for the money, right? You probably believe in all of it and to some degree, but you do one for the money and you do one for yourself. And you do one for the money and you do one for yourself, right?
Yeah.
and that's, you know, that you, there's some balance in the force, some balance in the universe there, that you say, well, this is a job and I do it for a living and I'm good at it, good enough to be, you know, called for the multi-million-dollar movie. I'm going to do that because I need to take care of myself. But then I'm afforded the opportunity to do some passion projects that may not pay well, but they are something that's close to my heart. So
yeah. Absolutely. I think that that's exactly it. Like, I got to the point, I mean, this was me, like, you know, 20 years ago, that I'd be like, absolutely, I'll just do it. You know, you have to do the, you're like, I got to pay rent and whatnot. But like, you get to the point where you're like, yeah, no, I don't think I need to do this. Because also, like, there's certain roles that I get offered because people want to see that character over and over again. And I'm very particular about, like, you don't need to see them over and over again. Like, you know, you saw them. And you need to take a break, and then maybe they come back later in a different form, in a different, you know, variation, then that's fine. But I've turned down stuff that was paying well and was a role that was very similar to something I've done. And I was okay with that because I was like, I don't need it that bad. And I also don't need to be known as that over and over again.
Right.
Also, what a great opportunity for someone else to take that role and create. Maybe you discover someone new. Like, you know, I've gotten sometimes where, like, people say, oh, by the way, that role that you were going to do and you turned out at the last minute, that went to this actor. And they wanted me to say thanks because they had just had a baby.
Oh.
They just had a baby and they were like, this was role was supposed to be Harvey, blah, blah, blah. And it didn't work out. And they needed a job and they needed a gig. And then they create a character in their own world. And I'm glad that that was an opportunity that was given to someone. The way the universe works, it's going to work always the way it's supposed to. And so I don't feel bad when I walk away from a role. I apologize if I can't do it. Of schedule, or I can't do it because I don't want to do that role. And it's, I think it's always better to say, I think this would be a great role for someone else. You know, I've actually recommended people for roles because I'm like, great role for this person. That's no shame, because I think that at the end of the day, you would want every actor to do the same thing for each other. You want the best person for the job. Yeah. And that doesn't always happen. Sometimes it's like, that just was an offer straight to that person because they're A-list or whatnot. It's going to happen. But if you can, why wouldn't you want to pass it over to your fellow lesbian and be like, I think you should do this. This is better for you. And I've had that happen to me, like an actor who does a reading of something. And they're kind enough to, like, say, hey, I think you'd be really great for this role. And it's a new play or a new something. And I read, I'm like, oh my God, you're right. This would be a great role. And I love that I have the relationship with, you know, fellow actors, that we can have a conversation. And it's not like mine. It's like, that's toxic. And it's a little bit, you know, but I'm very fortunate. So I'm very lucky to have the conversation with fellow actors that think alike that way.
Well, you're right, too. Once you kind of release things and, you know, aren't so precious with things, then it all, things go to other people and then things come to you.
And they come to you. I feel like the universe will reward you and for giving you. Like, that's like, you know, there's no need to, like, gatekeep or cover. And it's like, because that becomes this, like, I can't imagine, you know, from Lord of the Rings. Like,
yes. You know, yeah, the precious.
Yeah, it's toxic. Yeah.
It's so toxic. And it's just like, oh, God. And then sometimes I feel like in certain, without naming names, like this, with actors, you see that slowly becoming like you're doing everything and anything. And then you just it's like, let go of some of it.
Yeah, it's
like
a grab bag. Yeah, they just want everything because they can.
Yeah, it's like, let go of it. I pride myself in being a working actor, and people are like, you're always working. It's like, but always working on different things, you know?
Yeah.
Always working on different things that you didn't expect. You're like, you're the voice of... Okay, that's new. Oh, you're doing that? You're playing a demon? I never seen you play a demon. Yeah, I'm doing things that I want to do that make me feel like I'm giving and contributing to the world in a different way with my art, and it evolves every, you know, so often. And I'm okay with that, you know? And people are like, yeah, but you're always working. And I was like, for everything you see me do, you don't see me, like, the 10 things I didn't get, or the 10 things I turned down, or the 10th, you know what I mean? Like, you don't see that. Yeah. So they see the aftermath. And the funny joke is that people are always like, I discovered this new actor, and like, they think they discovered you, or they say that, or they call you an overnight success. I was saying it's funny, overnight success, because it's like, I've been hitting the pavement for a while. It's just now you see
we have this saying here is that for overnight success takes far too many nights, right? It really does. It's there's no such thing as an overnight success. I mean, you know, in today's influencer culture, sure, you can have a flashbang, you can have a reel blow up, and you know, for every Hawk Tua, There are 10,000 Harveys that have spent almost their entire life working at something, and they get a big break, deservedly so, right? And no knock on Hocktua, but that's a different kind of success, and it's usually flash in the pan. And you're building a career to outlive any momentary success you will have. And that's why I also imagine you don't want to get typecast. You want to bring in different roles.
Stuff you want that's interesting to you.
Yeah.
Creatively.
And the thing is, like, you just said it yourself, like, that I feel like this business is fickle. So, like, you know, the highs are high and the lows are low, but the cream will always rise. Like, it's like, if you're good at what you do, it won't be a one note kind of, you know, one trick pony kind of moment where why would people fight to bring the same thing over and over? Cause after a while it gets tiresome. But if you can, you know, evolve and like, and show different sides of you as an artist, I feel that eventually people are like, yeah, I want to work with him. He can do that. Great. He can play a villain. Great. He can play a sweetheart. Great. America's Darling. Great. Comedic, like whatever it is. Yeah. People want to work with you because they know that you're versatile and you can also keep going, you know. But I feel like if we see the same person doing the same thing over and over, eventually it's like, that's what you're known for, you know, and that's fine, but I don't think that's going to show, you know, a range.
Well, I think I think probably this lives more in the comedic lane, although I know that there's character actors who do the, you know, kind of the same character over and over again. But I notice that there's some comedians who play these comedic roles and they kind of play the same character every time. Right. And that's okay. Like if we find you funny for this reason, we find you funny forever and ever. But when you're an actor, like you really want to get out there and you want to show range so that people say when they're thinking of a project, they say, well, this may not be what I've seen him or her do before, but I think they can fit the role. If we give them, you know, if we give them the right material, then they can chew on it. I wonder for you, did you see, like, with the success of Shadows, do you see like a raise in your profile? Do you start going out on the streets and getting noticed more? Do you get more phone calls? Because I know that that's not like, you know, there's so much work that went into that before you kind of get this hype, this show that is a critic starling and high profile and all this other stuff. But did you see like a noticeable change in your in your amount of phone calls you were getting to your agent's office? Yeah.
I did. And it was great. But also I forget sometimes. And I think, you know, my sister reminds me and when we go out in public and stuff, because I'm really like, I don't care. Like, we'll go out in public and stuff. And I don't think about like, oh, this is a crowded area. And it recognized, it'll be like, you know, yesterday we're at the airport in San Antonio in Texas, and you're a small airport and great city. It's really lively. And like, we're just going to go to our plane. We saw like a little vending machine, licorice vending machine. And we like by the TSA area, and we went there and the TSA agent, excuse me, sir. And I was like, oh my God. And I turned around and they looked serious. Like, excuse me, sir, can I talk to you for a second? And I was like, oh my God. Like, what? I was like, what did I pack? Like, I was like, do you have a water bottle that I forgot? Like, I don't know. Is there edibles in my bag? I don't know.
Exactly.
What? I was just like, my whole life was like, what's going on? Oh my God. What did I do? I didn't know what I did. Like, my friend's too shy over there. And it was another TSA agent on the other side, like at work. And I was like, so she's too shy to say hello. Come over here and say hello. And she's like, and I was like, are you guys in the middle of work? Like, in the middle of a shift right now.
Yeah, but they're not getting paid right now. So they don't care.
They both came over and they said hi. And they're very lovely and very nice. But I thought it was so funny that I was like, yeah, people will recognize you and leave like their job post, like to go say hi. Right. Go, I think that person has a gun.
Exactly. Check that back.
Oh no, everyone's coming through without names. But it was very, you know, nice and sweet. But I forget that in public areas, especially, that happens. And I notice as the years go by, and now the show has ended, weirdly enough, the most random places, like we were in the middle of Ireland and Scotland earlier this year. We were at Loch Ness. We were in the middle of a boat in Loch Ness in the water. And one of the people on the boat was like, I'm sorry, were you from Companion? And I was like, yeah, in the middle of a boat, in the middle of a boat. I was like, wow. And it wasn't even Shadows. I assumed it would be Shadows, but Companion was a great, you know, hit earlier this year that everyone was watching that. And I've gotten that a lot. Like, I've gotten Companion a lot around the world, in Japan.
Companion was a hit, yeah.
Companion in Japan. So people have been watching stuff and they recognize it. And the thing is that they they know your face. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes them a second. So I see people walk by and they go, you know,
yeah, like I know that person.
The worst is when they start talking to someone next to them and I can't tell, and maybe this is like just my own security, I can't tell if they recognize you or they're literally talking shit.
Yeah, right. Like, look what that person has on his face.
Yeah. Is my hair okay?
And then I'm like, at that point, I'm just come over and say hi. If you want to say
hi. Right.
Or maybe they don't want to say hi. Maybe they recognize it. They're like, you know, go away. And then, but I've been, you know, it's most of the time, it's 90% is nice and they say hi, but yeah, the phone calls have been coming in because of the show, I feel like, and making connections. The last couple of roles have been like, you know, offers that someone presents to you, and it's very nice. But also, I still audition for stuff because there's stuff that they're going to need your audition anyways, you know, that I would gladly audition for, you know. So I'm not above auditioning for stuff, because if you want the right person for the job, I want to know that you got the right person for the job. Yeah. You know, going back to earlier, it's like, why would I want you to give me a role? Because I was on, you know, because I play Perrito, you know. It's just, yeah. No, I want you to give me a role because you think I can play that criminal, because I can play that lawyer. I can play, you think I can play that role. I did a good job with the audition, or you really believe in my talents that you, no audition is needed.
Yeah.
And you really do believe, you know. But that does, someone was saying the other day that I sent Kristen Schaal about this, like, it's funny when people do offer you something and then you do get the part and you do the job, and then there's questions, you know, they're like, well, maybe we should do it a different way. It's like, you gave me the part. What do you want me to do? You know, it's just
right.
Direct me. Tell me what you want to do. But that happens. You know, I think Lucas, who played my love interest and companion, just had a book come out. Shout out to Lucas. You go get his book. I wrote this for attention. That's the title of the book.
What's the title of the book? Say it again.
I wrote this for attention.
Yes.
That's a good one. It's a great title. And he talks about like getting fired, and like, you know, he got fired from Mad Men, and like every actor should get fired once. And everyone I know has had a story. I've had a story like where it does humble you, because even though you got a job based on like, we love you, and then you get replaced or recast. Again, it wasn't the right fit, but people make assumptions that, you know, it's smooth sailing. Like, you're always going to be on the smooth path after a certain role. You're going to be well off money for the rest of your life. And that's not necessarily true. This isn't like the money that we're making in the, you know, people are making in the 80s and early 90s on films and stuff. That's not the budget. We're so saturated with, you know, content that there's no way they can pay those checks like they used to.
Right.
Maybe 1% you know, that what has been grandfathered in from that already, but no one's getting those checks the way they used to. And so you constantly have to work on gigs and movies and whatnot to make a living at this, because there's so many, you know, people out there and hot tour, you know, moments where people casting that role goes to someone who is the hot viral moment, you know?
Yeah. Speaking of, there was a viral moment, and I don't know if this was a joke or not. Some people say it is, some people say it isn't, but there's like a comedy actress in California who did a bit for a movie, like a Netflix streamer, and they replaced her with the Hawk to a girl. She went and filmed. Did you see this? Do you know who this is?
She had a viewing party.
She
invited her friends over, and that's I so relate to that. My biggest fear is doing a part when I was like starting off, and even now, like honestly, like inviting people to a movie premiere or inviting people to an episode that you did, and then
they cut
like,
you out.
I hope they kept you in. Imagine inviting people and they find out in front of you with you at the same time that you're not in the movie.
You
got completely replaced. That must be so heartbreaking and devastating that I can't even imagine. Someone was videoed it, and for a while I was like, is this real? Did someone do this
too,
for, you know, for cloud or something? Because that is so heartbreaking that I hope it's not real.
Yeah, but apparently it was, or some people have said it was. She was replaced. Her exact role was replaced. It was only like three speaking lines.
They reshot that scene and recast that part.
With Hawk to a girl.
Yeah. And sometimes they don't tell you they do that. So sometimes, you know, I've been at table reads where like, you know, you meet the cast and you're like, we're going to be friends forever. The next 6 months are going to be the best time. Or like, let's all exchange info and Instagrams and whatnot at the table read. And after the table read, the studio is on, you know, screen, and they go to the director. Can we talk to you for a second? And everyone's like, oh, okay, business. Like, they're all talking work and we're going to leave. And you leave, or like, let's see each other for dinner. We'll see each other for dinner. We're moving to the big city. We're in New York or whatnot. And then by the time you get home to get ready for dinner, you look at your Instagram and one of the cast members is at the airport.
Oh,
that's got to suck.
Yeah.
They're at the airport. And this is a table read. This actually happened. We're at doing table read for iCandy for MTV, and Friday afternoon we had the table read, and it just, the chemistry wasn't there. They didn't feel it. I don't know what. But the actor, really talented actor, dancer, whatnot, and by Friday afternoon they're going home. By Monday we start. Mm-hmm. By Monday we have a new actor wearing that actor's clothes.
Oh God,
that actor, and we have to be like, hey. And actually, it works out for the best because that actor turned out to be phenomenal and an amazing person. And they were about to quit acting right before they got that call because they had not gotten that role. They were put on standby. They got standby. They didn't get it. And they're about to quit acting. And then they get the call. They got the call late Friday night. Can you be here Monday? We'll fly you out tomorrow.
Yeah. Listen, I mean, that's the name of the game. And, you know, you're right mm-hmm. about one thing. I want to just step backwards a little bit. This is not the money pit that it was back in the 80s and 90s. But back in the 80s and 90s, there were few, right? There were few opportunities.
There were five channels.
Yeah, there were five channels, yeah. And there were, you know, four big studios, and they were all the gatekeepers. Now, some would say they took chances on things they wouldn't take chances on now. But now there are hundreds of television shows, hundreds of streaming everywhere. Applications. And so there's a lot more opportunities, but you have to work harder. It's like you're not making $1 million per role. Mm-mm. Maybe you make 100,000, but maybe that's the role you got for the year, right? And that makes that kind of money. And so, and that, I think that's the plight of every artist right now. Musicians, podcasters, there are a few like Joe Rogan or whoever that make $400-500 million a year, but most of us are making a living. Mm-hmm. That's what we do, right? And so, and blessed to be doing that. Hey, listen, I wouldn't complain. I'm not digging ditches for a living, so yeah. I'm not going to complain.
So you, living, doing what you love.
That's yeah. it. That's all. I mean, who can, not many people
We've
say that.
We've talked about
yeah,
this.
Not yeah. many people say that. Yeah. Okay. You currently have Hell of a Boss that's on Amazon. What's coming up for Harvey? Where do we get to see you next?
I'm really excited for Damned If You Do, which is doing the festival circuit right now with Kate Siegel. Okay. Mike Flanagan's in it. It's a nice cameo. And the cast is really great. I get to play a demon who makes a deal.
I love it.
And that's always fun.
I would think so. Playing a demon would be fun.
I got really into character. It's very campy, and I love that. I feel like I haven't really done that with, like, you know, almost like a farce kind of comedy. And so it's very fun to see that. I went to the premiere of it in Hollywood last week, and the reviews were great. And people are, it's like finger looking good. It's like one of those like movies that you're like, yes, you know what you're getting yourself into. Also, another film is Pickleheads that takes the world of pickleball, competitive pickleball to the next level.
I think I've seen the trailer for this.
Has the trailer's been out for a minute? Is that right?
I think so. There's different, I know that everyone jumped on the wagon of doing a pickleball movie. So I think
there's a few of them out there. Okay. All right.
But ours is premiering in Austin, and it's super fun. Love the character I play. It's just totally different than what you've seen me play.
Yeah.
So I'm just really excited for these roles that are coming out, and also Hell of a Boss with Visago. I'm actually recording a new episode next week for that show, and that's such a huge fan base. Like the
fans,
Comic Cons, and full on dress. Like somebody came dressed like the first episode came out of Visago earlier in the year, and they just came out fully made from head to toe, full costume. And I was like, "Did you make this?"
Wow.
Like. Took me like, you know, 4 months, and I was like, whoa, like it was like the fans are incredible. You know, Viv is like an incredible showrunner who created the show, and it's just a great escape, and it's for adults. It's definitely for adults, like it's
animation. Yes, definitely for adults.
For adults because it's foul language, sexual scenarios, and it's just great, and it's just fun to do. But yeah, a lot of fun stuff that I'm looking forward to do. I also have a movie that we're placing now, actually, that I shot with Billy Lord. And it's just that one I'm really excited for people to watch.
Oh, I love her.
She's fantastic.
Yeah,
she's
she really is.
Anything she does, but we became really good friends. And I just want everyone to see her in this because we just have a good time. So it's really fun.
Nice.
Well, Harvey, it has been such a pleasure to meet you.
Honestly, we have said this a lot
on the commercial break. You visit the commercial break for two reasons. You're on your way up or you're on your way down. And we can confidently say with Harvey, you're on your way up. And so we really appreciate you being here. And I welcome you back, you know, anytime. You're welcome to come back. This has been a really enjoyable conversation. Congratulations on all the success, my friend. We are here rooting for you. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having me. I'll see you next time.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Let me do something Brian has never done. Be brief. Follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break. Text or call us 212-433-3TCB. That's 212-433-3822. Visit our website, tcbpodcast.com, for all the audio, video, and your free sticker. Then watch all the videos at youtube.com/thecommercialbreak. And finally, share the show. It's the best gift you could give a few aging podcasters. See, Brian? That really wasn't that difficult now, was it? You're welcome.
What a very, very nice gentleman Harvey is. I like that when I asked whether or not Harvey had ever been to a party where parents were allowing for drinking, Harvey said, absolutely not. That sounds dangerous. Not going to do that. I did not hang out with those kind of people in high school, but I should have. I should have hung out with those kind of people in high school. No shade here, Harvey. No shade here. I now hope my children are exactly like you. I think the kids these days are like Harvey. I think a lot of them go, drinking's not for me. Because alcohol, not only is it a gateway drug to a lot of other bullshit, but it really gives you a fucking headache. At least sometimes when I drink it. And I did drink it a lot when I was a kid. When I was his age, I would drink a lot. Anyway, okay, enough of mine. Harvey, all of his links are in the show notes. Go ahead and watch it. If you haven't started What We Do in the Shadows yet, you're too late. It's over, but go rewatch it. I think it's on Hulu now. So Disney Plus, there you go. Disney Plus has What We Do in the Shadows. Who would have thunk it? Not me when I was watching it, that's for sure. Also, tcbpodcast.com. That's where you go to get more information about the show, all the audio, all the video, right there at one location. And do us a favor, dial us up, 212-433-3TCB, 212-433-3TCB. Questions, comments, concerns, content ideas, we are taking them all. We certainly would appreciate it. Hit us up. Also, if you don't mind, if it's okay with you, follow us on Instagram at The Commercial Break. We're posting stuff there all the time. Also, Chrissy and I have our own personal Instagrams. Mine's Brian W. Green. Hers is Kristen Bransford, I think, is what it is. Those links are in the show notes also if you want to follow us personally. Sometimes I post stuff that's not show-related, on mine at least. And Chrissy just posted a picture of her Halloween costume, so definitely go follow that if you want to see that. And YouTube.com/TheCommercialBreak for all the episodes on video the same day they air here on the audio. As you noticed, Kristen had to scoot. She had to leave. It was a tight day for her, but we won't hold it against her. So I'll tell you that I love you, and then I'll say best to you and all the people out there in the podcast universe. Until next time, we will say, we do say, and we must say goodbye.